south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's get rocking. Questions. All I get is questions, but, you know, that's all right, so let's answer a few. This one's from Ron. He calls himself the Altiplano Procrastinator, not to be confused with the Altiplano Drifter, who writes coherent, above-average emails, too. And to think, before I began this show some 7 years ago now, whoa, people had no idea what the Altiplano was. Oh, people living here in Latin America did, but gringos? Only one, I'd say, in maybe 10,000 knew anything about it. And that's what this program's all about, education, if I have to beat it into you. So the Altiplano Procrastinator, Ron, writes, I'm just checking in with an idea, Johnny. I finally have a house for sale in the U.S. You can see it, and then he gives me the website. However, now I'm thinking of keeping the house and wonder if you have any opinions about house swaps in Latin America. Something as on homelink-usa.org. Perhaps one of your friends down there in Latin America would like a great place from which to explore the eastern U.S. Who knows? Johnny, you see, keeping the house overseas would avoid the problem of having more money sitting in banks paying zero interest or buying more precious metals with outrageous storage fees. I know, Johnny, just what you need, another business opportunity, right? All right, me, Johnny here. By the way, Ron, I think it's a great idea to buy precious metals, as much of the stuff as you can. But I think it's a very bad idea to store it at one of those facilities and pay, like you say, those outrageous storage fees, when in fact, when the feces does hit the ventilator, are you sure you're going to get that stuff back? Over the years, there have been countless gold and precious metal storage scams, so I'd watch out. Best bet, take possession of it and bury it in your backyard or on grandma's farm next to the chicken coop or somewhere private you can get access to at any time. And you probably know this, but others don't. Put your metals in a small PVC pipe, cap off the ends, and bury it vertically, not horizontally. Why? Because that'll make it exceedingly difficult for anyone to find if they've got a metal detector. Anyway, Ron, our Altiplano Procrastinator, goes on to say about house swapping. Of course, timing is everything. I just wanted to see if you thought that might fly. So, what do you think, Johnny? Well, I'm not sold on that idea, really. The fact is, Ron, people who are firmly committed to having a plan B and living down here in Latin America, they do not want to go back to the States unless they absolutely have to. The fact is, most gringos and expats sell everything, come down, and start a brand new life for themselves and don't look back. So I can't see there'd be much call for gringos and expats ever wanting to swap houses. Besides, most of us want to keep a low profile when we're down here. After slowly losing all our privacy up in the States, drip by drip, like the Chinese water torture. But thankfully, there's that other great thing about moving to Latin America. You've got another shot at privacy, a second chance at getting it back, if you plan correctly. Yep, believe it or not, you can start from scratch again. A lot of people have done it. You can, if you want, almost completely get off the grid. In fact, I know some gringos and expats who live a perfectly first world life with all the conveniences, yet you'd have to be a very good detective to find these guys. What I mean is, you won't be able to find them unless they want you to. So how do they pull that off? Well, for one thing, they stay off the social media. Then, of course, like I explained in so many past shows, you have your lawyer be your front man on most of the documents and contracts that you sign. Like, for example, smartphone, internet, utility, and rental contracts. Using a lawyer in conjunction with an SA corporation can get you off the radar like you wouldn't believe. So yes, you can start over. You can get a second chance. And if you want to go the full nine yards, you can even change your name once you're down here. It's totally legal and ridiculously easy. Oddly enough, at my seminars, that subject comes up quite a bit. But, you know, if you swap a house, automatically, man, you're on the radar again. First thing, of course, you'll be shooting addresses back and forth, and that's all over the net. You'll be Skyping and WhatsApping and sending photos all over the net, too. That means contracts, references, even credit checks. So if you really want to do your plan B right, you don't want to go house swapping because that'll involve opening up another can of worms for everyone to see on the net. Plus, if you're a little anal and persnickety like I am, that's the German side of me, I just don't want people in my house when I'm not there, because when you get back, it's never the same. Unless, of course, your place is built like the gorilla house at the Chicago Zoo. You know, you just shoo the gorillas out and hose the place down once in a while. I mean, if you're like most gringos, you've got nice art pieces, some collectibles, knickknacks, maybe even an heirloom or two. Not to mention, here in Latin America, you can build with some really cool stuff that you probably couldn't afford up in the States, like rainforest hardwood, mahogany floors and doors and windowsills. And what about those nice appliances you selected, and maybe your jacuzzi or sauna, and those electronic gadgets that can so easily get trashed? Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not big on other people fiddling with my stuff. Even worse if they're camped out in your house for weeks at a time. Of course, I'm talking about if it's your primary residence. If you've got a vacation home, you know, like a condo on the ocean in Belize or Cartagena, and you only use it a month or two out of the year, and you've got it in a rental pool, that's a completely different story, you know. You can expect some wear and tear from renters, and it's not your primary residence, so it was probably designed to be in a rental pool. But as for swapping out your personal residence, well, it's my personal opinion that I'd never do it. Oh, not that it couldn't work. I'm sure there are lots of upper middle class Latins that would swap a house with you in the States. But remember, Latins of all classes are short on details, and they're never going to take care of your place like you'd take care of theirs. So are you ready for that eventuality? By the way, if you swap with an upper middle class Latin family, surely you'll have a live-in maid. So why bring that up? Well, remember, a Latin family that can afford to swap is going to have a full-time maid. That means they're used to having maid service all the time. That means the family you swap with is not used to lifting a single finger to do anything around the house. So don't be surprised if it's a real mess when the contract's up and you get your house back. So yes, swapping your U.S. house for a Latin house is certainly possible. But I doubt if you get any gringo takers. It'll be mostly upscale Latins. As for me, I think there are way too many downsides. That is, unless your house is indestructible. Oh, by the way, this will blow your mind. Lately, on the big Latin television networks, I've been seeing quite regularly, mostly in the late night infomercial segments, there's a company, I think it's called American Properties or some BS, that's selling plots of land, get this, in Florida. So some Latin real estate company has found a niche to fan the flames of the sueño americano, that's the American dream. Though to any gringo who can understand the commercials, because they're all in Spanish, it looks like one big scam. Yes, it's a sucker pitch for Latin Americans who think they'll get a piece of Gringolandia. The ad is totally misleading. It shows happy upscale gringos frolicking, beautiful beachfront condos and South Beach and Disney World, only they're not beachfront lots. In fact, they never show the lots. I'm sure it's swampland. I'll bet half the time it's underwater. So what's the sucker pitch? Well, no money down, and they're selling them on the payment plan, with prices starting at about $35,000. However, if you call the 800 number or you go to the website, you find out you never have to visit your land. You can buy it from Latin America, pay the payments over 5, 10, or 20 years, whatever. No money down, no credit check, no bank approvals. Oh, and get this, the way they worded it, it makes it sound as if once you own land in the States or have a claim to own land in the States, like a mortgage, it's a shoo-in to get your green card. Now, they don't say that outright, but they surely infer it. So this real estate company is not aiming at the very wealthy upper 1 or half of 1% of Latins that can fly to Miami or Disney World once or twice a year just to go shopping. They have the money to buy houses and condos. They don't have to buy undeveloped, unproven lots like that. Instead, that company's targeting the next level down, people who can't fly in and out of the States quite so easily and probably have never been to the States at all. And most probably can't even qualify for a legal visa to the States. That would mean the majority of the targeted market could never pass a U.S. bank credit check or have the down payment to get a mortgage on a property. Actually, it's a pretty smart move by this real estate company. They know every Latin person's dream is to get a green card and own land in the States. So they market it to upper middle class Latinos, that would be middle class Americans to us, who can afford a couple $100 a month for the payment. To me, it's kind of brilliant. They market it to people who can't afford to actually go visit the land. No credit check, no down payment. All you have to do is sign up and start making the payments. And if you miss a payment or two or three, it's over with. You've broken the contract. And now that lot can be optioned or sold off to the next guy in a long line of gullible Latinos who are brainwashed by the American Dream Syndrome. Yep, P.T. Barnum said there was a sucker born every minute, but here in Latin America, there's one born every second. I'm sure of it. Now, believe it or not, this reminds me of a Pakistani-American guy who came to my very first seminar. Really nice guy. Now, he told me he made his first million buying up whole blocks of distressed property in Detroit, you know, ghetto war zone land. He said he was picking it up for sometimes $100 to $1,000 a house. I'm sure you heard the stories. Whole blocks, even subdivisions of Detroit housing, abandoned and blighted, went back to the city for non-payment of taxes, and you could pick up those condemned dumps for as low as a dollar each, or by just paying the back taxes. Well, this guy bought up whole city blocks in Detroit, in the worst areas, of course, got the titles free and clear, and then he took out ads in cheap supermarket newspapers, guess where, in Europe. Mostly, he said, in middle-class suburbs in England. And his ads would say you could buy distressed properties in the U.S., whole houses with lots, for around, I think he said, $10,000. Selling them on the payment plan with no credit check whatsoever to gullible Europeans, mostly British people, lower middle class and middle class, who also would love to have a real piece of land in the U.S. Again, same deal, no credit check. You just pay your monthly payment, a few hundred bucks a month, on a 5, 10, or 20-year mortgage plan, and if you missed a couple of payments, you broke the contract and the deal was off. So that property was freed up again to sell to another gullible Brit. He said the lower class of Brits who bought into that stuff didn't have the money to make the overseas trip to see that property themselves. And he said on the odd chance that someone actually did show up, he'd already informed them it was distressed property, neighborhoods that had hit rock bottom and had nowhere to go but up. Now, we know that anyone would have to be crazy to invest in Detroit property like that. But if you're from Newcastle, England, and you live in a council house, which is sort of welfare, and have big dreams, I mean really big dreams, well, at least that gives them some kind of bragging rights down at the local pub. The whole key, he said, was to market it to people who he knew would never be able to afford to take the trip to see these dumps. So, in fact, he had the title, so there was nothing illegal about it. Was it unethical? Well, you decide. All right, so you know how I feel about wife swapping. I mean, house swapping. You might feel completely different about it. Just my opinion, you know? All right, so that was an email from the Altiplano procrastinator. Now, you got one from the Altiplano drifter. Just mix it up a bit. Says, hey, Johnny, can you recommend someone that does LASIK eye surgery in, for example, Guatemala City? And approximately, what should one expect to pay for a treatment like that? All right, Drifter, not to beat a dead horse, but we've discussed medical issues like that many times. The fact is, if you're in any medium or large-sized Latin city, whether you're on or off the Gringo Tourist Trail, they've got all the first-world medical treatments and technology, just like you have up in the States. For example, in Guatemala City, there happens to be a medical zone, if you want to call it that. All the medical specialties are represented. They've got many hospitals and clinics, all private pay and first world. In fact, they've got an ophthalmology specialty building of around 5 or 6 stories, just loaded with ophthalmologists. What else, right? And you know, a gringo friend of mine, who's maquilas we visit at my Expat Insider seminar, he had LASIK surgery done on his eyes more than 10 years ago at that same clinic and is more than happy with the results. And the price, well, when you're off the gringo tourist trail like in Guatemala City, it can be from 1/5 to 1/4 of what you'd pay for the same thing up in the first world. And when you're on the tourist trail like Panama, Costa Rica, or Mexico, it's still a very good deal at around 1/2 of what you'd pay up in the States. Of course, it all depends on the doctor and the clinic. I'm just generalizing here. In fact, I generalize all the time on this show. People accuse me of that in emails too, and I say, well, life's all about generalizations, right? For example, if you're walking down the street and you feel like crossing, however, you see two guys on the other side of the street with tattoos on their necks, topped off with green mohawks and a few other body mutilations. Are you going to think twice about crossing that street, or are you just going to mosey on over and say, hey, nice hair? Well, as Dirty Harry would say, are you feeling lucky? All right, now an interesting question from a Mr. F. He'll be attending my July seminar. He says, Johnny, is medical marijuana and or hemp oil legal in Latin America? Would like to know the legal possibilities of bringing some down with us. Well, Mr. F., I can tell you this. As far as raw marijuana goes, I've never met anyone who's ever been busted down here, though I see on the news occasionally if someone has a pound or more stashed in his car and gets pulled over by the cops. With that amount, they'll assume you're a dealer and they're going to nick you. Now, when you see big busts on TV, it's almost always for large quantities of coke. Nowadays, that and heroin are the big ticket items in Latin America. With the legalization of marijuana, little by little up in the States, the marijuana business is not what it used to be, and the narcos are saying there's no future in it, meaning that they'll be shifting all their efforts to coke and heroin. So, even though Latin lawyers will tell you that marijuana and hemp oil are illegal throughout Latin America except in Uruguay. That said, legislation is in the works in almost all Latin countries to decriminalize marijuana and legalize it for medical use. So there's talk about it, and you read about it occasionally in the newspapers, but for now anyway, it's only legal in Uruguay. In fact, about 2 weeks ago, there was a report that Mexico was going to decriminalize marijuana for personal use. Looks like they'll be voting on that shortly, and most think it'll pass. Now, the truth is, all throughout Latin America, you could say marijuana is decriminalized in spirit, meaning the cops have no will or desire to enforce the legislation. Here's a perfect example. Now, when you make it to one of these big markets here, often you'll see little guys walking around selling little jars of stuff called marihuanona. You'll hear him yell, marihuanona, marihuanona, and you're thinking, wait a minute, that sounds an awful lot like marijuana. What are they selling? If you buy one of those little jars, I think it's like $2, you'll see the logo is a marijuana leaf. Yep, it's a mentholated marijuana cream used as a skin balm. It comes in nicely manufactured little tins and plastic jars like Carmex lip balm in the States. And you can get it right out in the open on the street. People are selling it in the market all the time, and it doesn't look homemade. Looks like it's manufactured at a plant. So lawyers and cops, I think, will tell you that marijuana is illegal, even medical marijuana. But yet they're selling this stuff right out in the open, and when people are caught with a couple of joints, nothing happens. You longtime listeners will probably remember me telling a story about a German drummer in one of my bands years ago who got in an accident, hit a kid on a bike. Traffic cops happened to be right there at the scene, so they hauled him down to the local police station. He had an ounce of pot in the car, had it right on the dashboard, or was it in the glove box? Can't remember. Anyway, he was worried. He figured he was going to spend the next 5 years playing Dodge the Weenie in the local slammer. But when his lawyer finally arrived and paid the necessary, what you might call, gratuities, he not only walked, but they gave him back his bag of pot, too. Which is another reason why you want to have a lawyer that you can call if anything out of the ordinary happens when you're down here. All right, and speaking of medical marijuana and hemp oil, I have a gringo friend who was really sold on the idea that hemp oil could help him with a medical condition. He went online and researched a guy named Rick Simpson who has formulas on how to make your own hemp oil. So my gringo buddy grew some in his backyard, collected about a pound of it, boiled up a batch one afternoon, and now he's got a nice little Gerber baby jar full of this stuff. And like he said, if it doesn't help his ulcer or gastritis, whatever, he could always smoke it. Which begs the question, would you have the balls to grow a pound of marijuana in your backyard just to cook up some hemp oil? The point is, down here a lot of people do it, even if it's considered illegal on the books. Why? Because there's little or no enforcement and no one really cares. All right, switching gears slightly, when I first got down here and for some years thereafter, I'd hear Latin ladies comment about kids they see and kids on TV. They'd smile and say these words, como Herber, which in Spanish means like Herber. And you know, I never quite got it until some years ago, I realized they were commenting about the baby or kid they'd seen saying just like Gerber, meaning the Gerber baby on the baby food jars. So when someone says como Herber, and it will always be a woman, a guy will never say that, what they're really saying is that baby or kid looks just like the Gerber baby. Latin people pronounce their G's as an H, thus Niño Herber, baby Gerber. Oh, and speaking of babies, you know, I've mentioned that when someone dies down here in Latin America, they'll put a big black bow on the front door of the house, and I mean big. Almost always around the size of the pillows you have on your bed. So you see them on doors and you see them on chicken buses too. That usually means the driver or his helper bit the dust. However, if a child dies, that is a person under 16, they'll put a white bow on the door, not a black one. And the casket will always be white too. So if you're driving around and you see a black bow or a white one, you'll know exactly what that means. Now a boots on the ground story from yours truly. The other day, my maintenance guy was doing some cement work, construction, drilling holes with an old Milwaukee brand hammer drill that I brought down with me from the States almost 30 years ago. So that hammer drill is old, but for those of you who know about construction tools and equipment, you know the name Milwaukee. Sure, the brand still exists, they're heavy duty, and not something the do-it-yourselfer would buy, they're just way too expensive. Why? Because they pretty much last forever. This Milwaukee hammer drill I'm talking about has had some life. It's helped build around 13 construction projects here in Latin America, and was still going strong till well the other day when my maintenance guy drilled, I guess, one too many holes in a very thick slab of concrete. Not to mention about a week earlier he dropped it off the roof and it fell two stories. So I let it cool down, I took it apart, noticed that the contacts, the brushes for the motor were a bit fried and worn down to the little springs that keep it in contact with the rotor. Now, brushes are little sticks of carbon about as thick as a pencil that start out maybe an inch long, and the more you use a drill or a motor that has contact brushes like that, well, they wear down to nothing. Now, looking at these things, I saw they were custom-made and soldered to the springs. So I checked on the internet for the nearest service center for Milwaukee drills, and, you know, every big Latin city has service centers for all well-known brands of tools. Bosch, Ryobi, Skill, DeWalt, Black & Decker, even Craftsman, because Sears is everywhere here in Latin America now. So I located the repair center for Milwaukee products. And, you know, because few people down here use Milwaukee, it's the high-priced stuff. Most will use Black & Decker or those cheap Chinese knockoff brands. And you may have heard of a brand called Trooper that's really popular here in Latin America. It's made in Mexico. That's probably the number one brand in all of Latin America. And 10 years ago, they didn't even exist. Why are they so popular? Well, they're about half the price of the expensive stuff and do get the job done. That is, if you're a do-it-yourselfer and use tools just occasionally, but I'd never own that stuff if I was a contractor. And just in the last year or two, Latin America has been flooded with weirdly named Chinese construction tools, and it's mostly all cheap-ass junk. So what's a local contractor going to buy? A Milwaukee tool that costs a month's salary, or a cheap-ass piece of Chinese junk that costs a quarter of that? So then who buys the high-end stuff? Well, there's not much of it, that's for sure, but it's those big construction companies. The ones that build shopping malls, subdivisions, and residential towers, they'll buy the heavy-duty expensive stuff that lasts a lifetime. Because, you know, when you're drilling holes through steel and concrete all day, you have to really have the heavy-duty stuff. Not the Mexican Trooper brand or the junk from China. By the way, that's not to say Milwaukee and DeWalt and all the others aren't made in China. Yeah, but they've got high-end first-world standards. So don't buy the Sangwangsheng brand from China. You'll be sorry. So anyway, the Milwaukee Tool Service Center was in an industrial, scruffy part of the big city, a place gringos would never want to live, work, play, or hang out, but that's normal. When I pulled into the protective parking lot, there was a big sign that showed all the brands they were authorized to service there. And sure enough, it wasn't a service center just for Milwaukee Tools. They serviced Black & Decker, DeWalt, Makita, Bosch, a lot of the high-end brands. So I handed over that poor old burnt-out Milwaukee drill to the guy behind the desk. He checked the computer for inventory and found what he called the carbones. It's spelled just like carbon. That's C-A-R-B-O-N-E-S, carbones. What we call brushes in English. They call them carbones because they're made out of carbon. So why not? Logical, right? He said, yeah, we have the carbones. And I said, how much? $25. I said, what? $25? He said, yeah, but original parts and all that. I think I paid something like $200 for that drill, so maybe it wasn't such a bad deal. But I also knew there was a little electric motor repair place called Edison. That's like Thomas Edison. Not so far away, in an even scruffier, dirtier part of the industrial section of town. An area that was okay during the day, but I'd never want to walk through it at night. It was a place a year or so ago where I'd taken my burnt-out exercise machine treadmill motor, and they fixed it, that is, rewired it, good as new, for around $30, and that was a big job. Not just carbones. So I told the guy at the repair center, I'll be right back, and I headed down to Edison. I walked in, handed the drill to the guy behind the counter. I said, how much to fix this? He looked at it for about 2 minutes and said, no problem. Be ready tomorrow with brand new carbones. The price? $5. I said, $5? And he said, yeah, that's because I got to put them on the lathe and make them by hand. Like he was apologizing and justifying why they were so expensive. You getting this? So, of course, I gave him a crack at it, picked it up, works perfectly. Even gave me a 90-day guarantee. And the moral of that story is, you go to a first-world service center, you pay first-world prices. You go to a local guy, you pay Latin prices. Same thing happened about 3 years ago when my LG washing machine took a crap. A solenoid was leaking on the intake water valve, and I stopped into the authorized service center. They said $20 for the house call, plus parts. Meanwhile, a couple of miles away, there's a little hole in the wall. Appliance repair shop, really tacky looking. Washers, refrigerators, and microwaves stacked everywhere. Well, he came over to the house, no charge. Came back with the part about 2 hours later, total cost, $20. Versus the authorized service center, which would charge $20 just to come over and look at the thing. Now, of course, I'm talking about getting things fixed when they're out of warranty. But you get the idea. Bottom line, always give the little local repair guys a crack at whatever breaks down in your house before you take it to the factory authorized repair center. Makes sense on two levels, doesn't it? First of all, you're getting a great deal, and second of all, you're giving the local neighborhood guy the work. All right, we're getting close to my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. As this show's going out on June 23rd, and the seminar starts July 8th. You still have a chance to get in. Got a few spots left. There's always a last-minute scramble to get in, you know. Anyway, if you're still working out the details, don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link for full information and sign-up details. Once you're there, you'll also see some information about those famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. You don't want to miss one or both of those if you're thinking about doing business in Latin America. That's where the ideas will really pop up. And if you just can't swing it or get boots on the ground right now, don't forget to sign up for my Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com to get my 3 free introductory videos to my 9-hour course. Hey, check it out. What have you got to lose? They're free, right? And finally, when you're at the newexpat.com website, you'll see there's a phone consultation /questionnaire form you can download. You'll need that if you're thinking of doing a one-on-one consult with me. Do have a look at that to see if you've hashed through all the questions pertaining to your own Plan B.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.